And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5. And Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Good evening and welcome to Spotlight. Tonight we are going to talk about the enduring legacy of Imam Khomeini, a visionary leader whose influence continues to shape Iran and the wider world. On the 36th anniversary of his passing, millions commemorate his revolutionary ideals, his unwavering commitment to justice, and his profound impact on global movements for resistance and self-determination. From his leadership in the 1979 Islamic Revolution to his philosophy of spiritual resilience, Imam Khomeini's teachings remain deeply relevant in today's socio-political landscape. As we explore his legacy, we ask, how do his principles continue to inspire generations, and what lessons can be drawn from his visions for the future? Today, also tens of thousands gather in different parts of Iran to commemorate this legacy, as Ayatollah Khomeini also addressed a huge crowd in Tehran. I am Bahman Nouri, your host. Let us begin with a short report.
Iran marked 36 years since the departure of Imam Khomeini, the visionary leader who defied global arrogance and inspired liberation movements worldwide. Thousands gather at his shrine, renewing their pledge to uphold his revolutionary ideals of resistance, independence, and Islamic justice. In his address, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, described Imam Khomeini as the architect of a resilient, stable, and sovereign political system. He emphasized that 36 years on, Imam's influence remains evident in the global dynamics. On the nuclear issue, Ayatollah Khamenei firmly rejected U.S. demands, asserting that Washington has no legal authority to limit Iran's right to enrich uranium. Despite five rounds of indirect talks, Washington's contradictory demands, including its insistence on zero enrichment, have stalled progress. While no date has been set for the future negotiations, the onus is on the U.S. to abandon its failed maximalist approach.
Welcome back. Allow me to introduce my guests. Reza Veda, the academic researcher and author, joining us from Muscat. And Ali Morad, political analyst, joining us from Beirut. Gentlemen, very good to have you on the program. I'm going to start with you, Reza, if I may call you Reza, of course, and Ali. Why was the idea of independence, Reza, so central to the leadership doctrine of Imam Khomeini?
If you look at the history of the Islamic Revolution, it came about because many aspects of Iranian society, not just the religious that followed Imam Khomeini, but also the secularists, came together to remove the Shah. The Shah's political system that he had set up, the regime that he had set up, revolved around him. There wasn't much participation of the masses, the public, the Iranian citizens in governing the country. And so they didn't reap the rewards of the huge financial gains from petrol sales that he, in the last 10 years of his reign, that came towards the Iranian nation. And so, not just because of the financial gain, but also because of the political interaction of the masses, the citizens, with the regime. They didn't have freedoms like they have in Iran. Right now, you can go to Iran and you can talk about politics, and you're very safe. Before, there's a lot of documentaries that showed even artists threatened by the Sawak. Sawak was the secret service of the Shah. If they had tried to participate in any film, in any program, media program that criticized the Shah or the Pahlavi regime, they were threatened that they would be killed in a way that it would look like as if it was an accident. So we have to look at the reasons that caused the people of Iran to uprise. And another issue I want to add before I finish was that Iranians have become fed up of being second-class citizens in their own country. So if you're an American, there was a law that stated if an American individual, not even a military individual, just any American citizen, kills an Iranian citizen, they're not taken to an Iranian court. They will be taken to American judiciary, and the law would apply that way. So there's a famous saying of Imam Khomeini that a dog from the American's dog can kill Iranian king and he can get away with it.
Right, very good. To build up on that question, Ali, I'm going to ask you this. Imam Khomeini was very firm in rejecting Western influence since the beginning of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And how does that, how did that shape the future of Iran's foreign policy, you think?
Thank you for having me. First of all, we have to take a look back to the history of the region before the Islamic Revolution. The nations, the people of the nations in the West Asian area were facing a hegemonic forces, mainly by the U.S. influence, the U.K. And other Western forces. They were trying to submit all the nations and the governments to their will. And of course, there was a resistance movement in the region. It was, of course, having setbacks. But when Imam Khomeini showed up on the theater, his thoughts and his teachings were like inspiring many people in our region. If you take a look to Palestine, for example, you got the Islamic movement in Palestine that was inspired by Imam Khomeini's thought. If you take a look to Lebanon, you will see that some of the founders of Amal movement, they were inspired by Imam Khomeini's thoughts, and they went to establish Hezbollah movement. Of course, Imam Khomeini's thoughts, they were not specific for the 70s or the 80s. It was, and it is still, up to now, inspiring to many nations. If you take a look to Yemen, for example, Sayyid Hussein Badreddin al-Houthi, who established the movement that wanted to face the U.S. influence in Yemen, they were inspired by Imam Khomeini after Imam Khomeini died, which proves that the thoughts and the teachings of Imam Khomeini, they were inspiring to many generations that came after the era of Imam Khomeini in Iran. Of course, the Islamic Revolution, which adopted a referendum, that a constitution that supports the you know, the people who are facing the hegemonic forces, especially the West. This played a major role in shaping the foreign policy of Iran. And if you take a look now, after 1979, we are talking about 46 years, the Islamic Revolution, and the Islamic political system in Tehran is still committed to supporting those nations who are being attacked and bombed by the United States and the Zionist regime in the region. And this is why Iran has succeeded in many parts in supporting those nations and those movements, liberation movements.
Right, Reza. Imam Khomeini today in his speech was very insisting on the fact that Imam Khomeini's positions and stance against America was key in the decline of power of the U.S. in the region. I want to know, how do you think his critique of Western hegemony in the region affected the current global shifts from Western dominance and U.S. dominance in particular?
Well, I recently started a paper that discusses Ayatollah Khamenei's decolonial theorist positions. Colonial academics or activists would approach a secular methodology towards decolonizing either their countries or their regions. Ayatollah Khamenei includes within that a religious paradigm. So he brings in the Quran and uses the Quran as a template of how humans should live their life. And one of those aspects is decolonizing from hegemonic powers. And then when I was thinking about this, I realized that Ayatollah Khamenei is continuing the legacy of Imam Khomeini. And Imam Khomeini, 45, 50 years ago or further, he began the theorization and eventually activating a decolonial process of delinking and decoupling our countries, so, you know, Iran or Iraq or other countries that participate in this activity, away from US-led Western hegemonic imperial power. And the process started with the revolution, and it continues. And we have to look at Imam Khomeini for the 9 years that he was the Velayat Faqih, or the 10 years that he was Velayat Faqih, he was the leader of the Islamic Revolution. He achieved a great victory. However, you have to add on to that the 30-plus years that Ayatollah Khamenei has battled against Western powers. It's not a joke. For 30-plus years, Ayatollah Khamenei has been able to manage 90 million Iranians, plots, military plots, economic plots, conspiracies, assassinations against the Iranian nation. And he's managed to prevent this from making the Iranian nation fall back into the bad habits of participating in the global hegemonic powers. All you have to do is look across the Persian Gulf. You look at the Arab countries. It was only a month ago, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, where President Trump visits them, and they're hailing his visit as if it's some kind of achievement for their countries, as if him arriving to their country has somehow benefited them, other than the fact that they just handed over $2 or $3 trillion of deals where they pay the United States for services and other things. So the contrast between what Imam Khomeini did and what Ayatollah Khomeini has continued to do, to make each country understand the ability that it has to stand on its own feet and not rely for its power and its position on Western hegemony, because all they do is suck the resources and the energy and abuse the power they have.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Ali, tell me, how do you think Iran's nuclear policy today reflects Imam Khomeini's stance on national sovereignty?
Well, before I answer your question, it is good to go back to what Imam Khomeini had as a stance with regards to dealing or speaking with great powers. You know, many parties in the region, and of course the Europeans and the Westerns, the Americans, they thought that the Islamic Revolution is backed by the Eastern Bloc in 1979. But Imam Khomeini clearly sent a message to the Westerners, as well as the Soviets by then, that Iran is an independent sovereign nation. It is not controlled or backed by the West or the East. And you can take an example here. When Imam Khomeini received Shevardnadze, the Soviet foreign minister, when he came with a letter from Gorbachev, by then Imam Khomeini sent a powerful message that Iran is a sovereign nation. No one can dictate to the Iranian people and the Iranian leadership how to behave what to do. And this is a policy that the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic regime in Tehran is following since Imam Khomeini. So now, if you take a look to the nuclear negotiations, it's quite clear that the Americans are facing, through the Trump administration now, is facing this sovereign government who is facing all the pressure from the Americans, because the whole thing with the negotiations and the nuclear agreement, it's about how the Americans are approaching it in a way that we have to find a way to make Iran submit to our will, to make Iran be a follower of the West and us. And this is not going to happen, because what Imam Khamenei today said in the ceremony commemorating Imam Khomeini's memorial, I think it was quite clear. We are not going to submit to your terms. The Iranian people has a sovereign right to enrich uranium on the Iranian soil. And this actually is in the heart of the thoughts and the teachings of Ayatollah Khomeini.
Right. Reza, I wanted to know your opinion on the matter as well. Well, today, the leader of the Islamic Republic reiterated his position regarding Iran's independence, self-sufficiency and strength. I want to see, how do you see Ayatollah Khamenei's position in regarding the current U.S. and Iran talks on the nuclear activities of Iran in line with Imam Khomeini's vision of an independent Iran?
So if you look at Imam Khomeini's position at the time, it was the 1980s. We just were engulfed with the war with Saddam's regime, supported by the Europeans, the U.S., the Soviets, and other Arab countries, financed by other countries. And Iran was mainly on its own. It didn't have the technological military advances that it has now. It didn't have the networks of connections to different parts of the West Asian region, so Yemen and Lebanon and Iraq. It didn't have those connections that it does have now. So Iran is in a much more powerful position right now than it was 40 years ago when Imam Khomeini took the country, where after the revolution, many of the military fled because they were loyal to the Shah. Many of the equipment that we had didn't work properly because it was maintained by the U.S. and they never trained Iranians on how to maintain it. So Iran, in a military way, it cannot be attacked. If it's attacked, it will destroy whoever attacks it. So now remains another issue that Iran is trying to grapple with, and that's the economy. And the United States and the Europeans have done as much as they can to weaken the Iranian economy through sanctions, sabotage, and other interferences. However, we can see that Ayatollah Khamenei, in the speech that he gave at Imam Khomeini's shrine, there was no doubt that he said that there is, the statement that he used, that there's nothing that they can do. This gives a strong position to the negotiating team, the foreign minister of Iran, to say, look, ultimately, you will either accept our terms to negotiate and come to a resolution, or there is no deal. I think in 2015, the negotiating team, the foreign minister at the time, and his team were a little bit weaker. They didn't have the military strength that they have, and they were reluctant to get the deal done. On this occasion, Ayatollah Khamenei has made it clear that if there's going to be any deal, it has to be done on Iran's terms. Iran has the right to enrich and do whatever it wants in the nuclear sphere in a peaceful process. It's within the law of the United International Law and all the international agreements that it's part of. And no other country, the East or the West, has the right to tell Iran what to do. And this enrichment is very important, because what it does is, as Ayatollah Khamenei stated, it's the head or the parent that enables other technologies, right, other advancements that Iran has the right to achieve.
Right. Ali, I want to zoom out a little bit and talk about the wider Islamic world now. The declaration of International Quds Day by Imam Khomeini at the time, which was welcomed by all Islamic nations. I want to know your opinion on the significance of this in turning the issue of Palestine from a regional issue into a global one.
Well, it's a good question. I think that in 1979, when the revolution in Iran triumphed, Imam Khomeini was keen to send a message to the Islamic world that as Egypt was leaving the fight against the Zionists in the region by signing the shameful agreement, the so-called peace agreement with the Zionists, the Islamic revolution in Iran tried to fill the gap. And I think they filled it, and they were successful in awakening many, many Muslims across the Muslim world. Because I was mentioning earlier that in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Yemen, there are other Islamic nations who came to Iran. They were inspired and they liked the speeches and the thoughts and the teachings of Imam Khomeini. And I think what Imam Khomeini did by kicking out the Zionists from Tehran and turning the embassy to the Palestinian embassy was a powerful message. If you go to any Palestinian now and ask him about the impact of such a move, they would tell you that it was Imam Khomeini's legacy. No one dared to do the same with regards to treating the Zionists this way as Imam Khomeini did. And it was not about diplomacy or a political move. It was something proved by the support and the aid that Iran has given to the Palestinian resistance. The Palestinian resistance now, it's true that they are facing a genocidal regime,
right,
in Gaza. But I think that many, many Palestinians and also Lebanese and also Syrians, we saw a good message yesterday in the Golan Heights by the operation conducted by a new group of resistance there. I think that Iran is going to stick to Imam Khomeini's legacy by supporting the resistance, and everyone who wants to attack the colonial system in our region, because the colonial system is like 10,000 kilometers far from our region. They have to go back to their countries. They don't have to be here in our region,
right,
by strangling our nations and our, looting our wealth. I think that Imam Khomeini, in his speech today, he was trying to send a message to the Islamic world that it would be shameful for you to keep on the silence that we noticed now. It's been like 20 months now of genocide in Gaza. You have to move. You have to do something to the Palestinian people.
Right. Thank you so much, gentlemen. I wanted this conversation to go on, but unfortunately, and for the sake of time, we have to end it here. It was a pleasure to have you here, Reza Vedadi, academic researcher and author joining us from Muscat, and also Ali Murad, political analyst joining us from Beirut. And once again, my condolences on the occasion of the passing anniversary of Imam Khomeini. Thank you so much for staying with us on another Spotlight.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Worship is not praying all night and fasting all day. True worship is avoiding sin and practicing honesty. Peace and blessing be upon you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of For a Better Life. This is Nahid, having the honor of hosting you on another episode. Well, this is For a Better Life, where we reflect on timeless wisdom through the lens of Islamic teachings, especially those handed down through the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam. Today, we delve into a profound theme: the real value of worship and the importance of integrity in our daily lives. Well, let's start by reciting a part of Saadi Shirazi's Bostan, Saadi, the famous Iranian poet and prose writer. Saadi's words echo a deep truth. We associate worship strictly with physical rituals like pray, fasting, pilgrimage, but these are certainly acts of devotion. But the soul of worship lies in the intention, lies in the purity, and in the ethics behind our actions. In the Holy Book of Quran, Allah says, "Indeed, the prayer restrains from indecency and wrongdoing. The purpose of worship is transformation. If our prayer and fast don't change our character, don't make us more truthful, more just, more compassionate, then we must question their sincerity." Well, talking about the worship and the concept of worship in our mind, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam had mentioned, "Do not be deceived by the long prostration and prayer of a man, for that may become a habit. Rather, test them by how they speak the truth and return trust." This hadith is incredibly powerful. It teaches us that the true indicator of a person being religious is not how long they pray, but how honest they are, how trustworthy they are, and how they behave when no one is watching. From the Shia perspective, worship and morality are inseparable. A person who prays regularly but cheats others, gossips, or even lies has missed the heart of Islam. In the Book of Bustan, we have many of the narrations, many of the pieces of literature that are highlighting this fact that there are many examples of people who claimed to be Muslims, who were even nagging at the other people and were labeling them as the wrongdoers. And at the end of their story, that so-called wrongdoer turned to have the deeper faith and belief in the Creator, since he was more aware of what he was doing and who he was worshiping. Well, let us consider this. When a shopkeeper gives correct change without being watched, that is worship. When a student resists the temptation to cheat, that is, of course, worship. When an employee works honestly, even when no one is supervising them, that is worship. Imam Ali alayhi salam had mentioned, "The worth of every man is in what he does well." He didn't say the worth lies in number of prayers or fast, but in the quality of one's actions. The Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam were also known for their unmatched balance between worship and integrity. We have the examples in their lives, and the examples are deeply spiritual. And the way they were worshipping toward Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala are the great examples. The night prayers were not just for themselves, of course. They remembered others before themselves, and they advised us to do so the same way. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam has also taught, "The best among you are those who have the best manners and characters." So here, what comes is the concept of character. We're not saying that worshipping is wrong, all the fasting and all the prayer that we are doing every day is going to be in vain, but rather, what we are after today is evaluating what we are doing and considering our actions regarding what Islam, this great religion, has taught us.
ارتباطتون رو با خدا قوی کنید. در مسائل دینی به نقاط عقلانی و ظریف
Improve your connection with God. Pay attention to logical and detailed points in religious issues and learn them from great masters. There are sentiments in religion, but they rely on deep ideality and deep thought. This thought must be learned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Welcome back to For a Better Life, where today we are talking about the balance between our worship and the way we are thinking and rethinking our actions. So what does this mean to us today? The first step regarding the lives that we are living in is evaluating our worship. It's worthy that every night we can simply ask ourselves, does my prayer help me resist anger? Does fasting make me more patient? If the answer is yes, then you are on the right way and you are doing what will help you in this life and the hereafter. But if you have to think deeply and try to find an excuse for it, then it is clear that we need to rethink and reevaluate what we are doing. Well, the second thing that we can mention is to strive for inner honesty. Integrity is doing the right thing even when it's hard, and especially when no one sees. Here comes this kind of honesty, which is going to be rare. This kind of honesty that even though I know there is no one else to monitor, to supervise, or even see what I'm doing, I will go still with the same way, and I will keep doing the good things that I was doing when the other people were watching me as well. The third concept is to stay trustworthy. We need to return what's the entrusted to us. Speak the truth even when it's uncomfortable. Of course, in this hectic lifestyle, sometimes it's too hard to go with the truth. And with it will come much of the problems and the uncomfortable situations. But that is the character of a Muslim that will still speak the truth, though she or he knows what is awaiting them afterward. Well, the last, not the least, is to serve others as worship. Helping a neighbor, feeding the hungry, comforting a friend, these are all acts of worship in the eyes of God. We don't need to just necessarily be praying the whole day or asking God for advice and guidance. These little concepts are what we are also recommended to go through in the great book of Sa'di. Sa'di names many examples of those characters who were in the hardship, like the servants of a king who were in hardship and hunger, and the king was living a happy life claiming to be the best king ever, but still their beliefs and what they were rooted in was wrong. Well, let us return to Sa'di's words in this way, that Sa'di puts it in the best sentence possible and says, "True worship is avoiding sin and practicing honesty." This little simple sentence echoes the essence of Islam, a faith that calls not only for devotion, but for transformation. And then worshiping is not limited to the mosque or to the prayer mat. It is found in every honest word, every just action, and every moment of keeping the face of a Muslim who is aware of the presence of Allah. O Allah, grant us the blessing of sincere worship, worship that transforms our hearts and our lives. Help us to be among those whose prayers bear fruit in their character, whose fasts lead to patience, and whose actions reflect your light. Let us walk the path of the Prophet and his family in both worship and integrity. Until next time, dear listeners, may your worship be sincere and your actions guided by truth. This was today's For a Better Life. Stay safe, stay true, and may peace be upon you all. Until another time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart. There will always be there. Be there.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast round the clock for listeners across the globe. The English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting can be heard via shortwave, internet, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz every day on 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in the Southern Africa can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 11,740 kilohertz every day on 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Iran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means.
Thank you.
Khordad 15th sparked the Islamic Revolution. In the name of God, Salam everybody, and today on the historic 5th of June, the anniversary of the Khordad 15th uprising, which lit the sparks of the Islamic Revolution that eventually triumphed 16 years later in 1979 to change the destiny of Iran, we present you an exclusive feature. Please stay with us. In the famous Encyclopedia of Hadith titled Bihar al-Anwar, compiled some 3.5 centuries ago by the celebrated Iranian scholar Allama Muhammad Baqir Majlisi, one comes across an interesting statement from Imam Musa Kazem Pisapani, the seventh infallible heir of the Prophet of Islam. The wordings of this hadith are, "A man from Qom will rise and invite people towards truth. Around him will gather people like slabs of iron, who will stand firm against strong winds and storms, and will never get tired of war. They know not fear and have trust in God. The outcome is for the pious." A study of this statement expressed over a millennium and 2 centuries ago by an infallible imam shows that no such event had occurred in the Iranian city of Qom throughout all these centuries until the year 1963, when a venerable jurisprudent raised his voice against the godless Pahlavi regime that was installed by the British and backed to the hilt by the Americans in order to keep the Muslim nation of Iran in thrall. True to the words of this hadith, if the despots and the hegemonic powers quaked at the uprising of this man of God from Qom and put him under detention, the seekers of truth responded to his call and launched the Khordad 15th uprising on June 5th to defend him like slabs of iron. This was Sayyid Ruhollah Musavi Khomeini, who was incidentally a descendant of Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, and had reached the status of ijtihad, earning the title Ayatollah because of his erudite learning, wisdom, and prudence that covered political developments as well. To begin with, the political acumen of Ayatollah Khomeini, who later in life would be granted by a grateful nation the honorific title of Imam or Leader, came to the fore in 1943. This was the year when he wrote his famous work, Kashf al-Asrar, shortly after the removal from power of the unlettered tyrant Reza Khan Pahlavi from the Peacock throne. This budding theologian and jurisprudent clearly saw that the Pahlavi dictator's mortgaging of national prestige and natural resources to foreigners, his repression of the Iranian people and their traditional values, his forced unveiling of women in the name of progress and civilization were all part of an elaborate plot conceived by world imperialism to eliminate Islam as a social and political force. He wrote, "All the orders issued by the bandit Reza Khan have no value. The laws passed by his parliament must be erased. All the idiotic words that have proceeded from the brain of that illiterate soldier are rotten, and it is only the law of God that will remain and resist the ravages of time." The book could be called the start of a mission which would begin to bear fruits 20 years later. In the meantime, after the British replaced Reza Khan with his son Muhammad Reza in 1941, Ayatollah Khomeini maintained his upright opposition to the upstart Pahlavis. Throughout the 1950s, he led a quiet life of study, contemplation, and teaching that would reflect on his future greatness. Things, however, took a sudden change in 1963 when Muhammad Reza, emboldened by the death of the leading marja or source of emulation of the time, Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Hossein Borujerdi, launched his so-called White Revolution, which was no more than a whitewash to conceal his destruction of the country's socio-religious infrastructure in order to make Iran totally dependent on the U.S. Imam Khomeini sensed the danger. He warned the nation against the sinister plot. Matters were now moving towards a showdown, and when the ulema forbade the festivities of Nowruz or New Year Day that year because the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Jafar Sadiq peace upon him happened to fall on March 22nd, the ungodly Shah felt enraged and ordered his infamous attack on Madrasa Faiziyeh in the holy city of Qom the very same day, which resulted in the killing and wounding of several ulema and religious students. Things moved at a rapid pace, and on June 3rd, 1963, which happened to be the day of Ashura, Imam Khomeini delivered his famous speech in Qom, which shook the Peacock throne in Tehran. He compared the Shah's oppression of the people to the persecution of the Prophet's family, the Bani Hashim, by the Umayyad regime, and bluntly told the Pahlavi potentate that the nation would throw him out if he continued his anti-Islamic measures in the service of the US and the illegal Zionist entity, Israel. The Shah ordered his security police to arrest Imam Khomeini, an incident which sparked the 15th of Khordad uprising. He was detained for 2 months, and upon his release, he called on the people to boycott the mock elections to be held by the regime in October 1963. He was imprisoned again and held until May 1964. In October 1964, when the Shah signed the bill which came to be known as the Bill of Capitulation, since it exempted American citizens from facing any legal measures even if they were to violate Iranian laws and act criminally, Imam Khomeini expressed his strong opposition to this humility of the nation, saying, "If the dog of an American was to bite the Shah, the latter will have no recourse except in an American court of justice, perhaps." Imam Khomeini was immediately arrested by the regime and exiled to Turkey, from where he soon moved to Iraq to take up abode in the blessed sanctuary of Najaf near the holy shrine of Imam Ali, peace upon him. Here, the innate qualities of faith and resistance in this great Gnostic definitely got a new veneer and made him so absorbed in the path of the Prophet's Ahlul Bayt or progeny that he considered the martyrdom of his elder son, Ayatollah Sayyid Mustafa Khomeini, in 1977 in Iraq, at the hands of the Shah's dreaded secret service, SAVAK, as a matter decreed by God. Imam Khomeini thus offered his own personal sacrifice to the cause of the Islamic Revolution. Earlier, in April 1967, he had written a strongly worded open letter to the Shah's Prime Minister, Amir Abbas Hoveyda, warning him that one day he would be held accountable for his treason to the nation. In 1971, Imam Khomeini denounced the wasteful expenditure of the commoner-turned-Shah for celebrating the so-called 2,500 years of monarchy in Iran. It is sufficient to say that from his sojourn in Holy Najaf, Imam Khomeini ably directed the rising tide of the Islamic Revolution, which first lapped Qom in January 1978 after the publishing of an insulting article by the regime against Imam Khomeini in the daily Etelaat, and then engulfed all Iran. The rest is history. The events that followed, including his triumphant return to Iran on February 1, 1979, to establish the Islamic Republic, and the 10 years that he was at the helm of affairs of the Islamic Republic, defeating every conceivable plot of the superpowers, especially that of the great Satan, the US, are well documented and too vivid in our memory to be repeated in this brief radio program. Thus, the 15th of Khordad that occurred 56 years ago was one of the major events in the history of Iran and the world that not only changed the destiny of Iran, but continues to have far-reaching political, cultural, and religious impacts on the region and beyond. As could be evinced by reflecting on the wording of the hadith from Imam Musa Kazim, peace upon him, the seekers of truth continued to rally around him with iron resolve, braving the 8-year war imposed by the great Satan, the US, through Saddam in the 1980s, thereby ensuring that the dynamic Islamic Republic system, founded by him, would continue, God willing, until the reappearance of the promised savior of mankind, the Prophet's 12th and last infallible heir, Imam Mahdi, to usher in the global government of justice. Amen.
Desde el corazón de Asia Occidental, la hora de Irán te sumerge en el mundo persa. Conocerás su cultura y posición en el mundo.
Hola, queridos oyentes, bienvenidos a una nueva emisión de La Hora de Irán. Es un placer estar con ustedes. Como siempre, agradecemos a todos los que nos siguen en cada programa y a quienes se unen por primera vez. Les recordamos que pueden participar y enviarnos sus comentarios y mensajes a través de nuestro sitio iranradio.ir. Hoy tenemos una programación especial para ti, diferente a los programas anteriores. El programa de hoy es en memoria del comandante mártir Qasem Soleimani, el comandante iraní que fue martirizado por los Estados Unidos de Norteamérica el 2 de enero de 2020. Así que no se despeguen de la radio. Vamos a empezar con una conversación sobre la personalidad del mártir Qasem Soleimani. Les invitamos a escuchar la primera parte de este programa especial.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. En el nombre de Dios, el misericordioso, el clemente. Muy buenos días, queridos hermanos y hermanas de América Latina, especialmente de Venezuela. El día de hoy tenemos un programa muy especial. Hablaremos de aquellos hombres que trascienden, aquellos hombres que dejan un legado en la historia y nunca mueren. Por ejemplo, comenzaré de un gran hombre como fue Simón Bolívar.